Hello folks, welcome to Secrets of Storytellers. This is the first episode in the series on Chatter in the Mind. And we have Arjun Majumdar with us today, founder of India's largest trekking community, India Hikes. So let's welcome him and talk to him more about the organization and about him. Hi Arjun, welcome to Secrets of Storytellers. How are you?
I'm fine, Shivam. Thank you for having me on your show, and I'm glad to be part of this wonderful show that you have created.
Lovely. Thank you so much for taking out the time to speak to us, Arjun. I've trekked twice with India Hikes, and both the times I never thought I would have a chance to speak with you, the person who's behind creating an organization which has made trekking so easy. So I want to start by asking you, what is India Hikes? How would you describe India Hikes?
See, India Hikes has... it's an organization which is primarily bringing out trekking in our country, which is kind of developing trekking in our country. So our vision is that everyone must trek.
Okay.
And that's what India Hikes' journey is. We want everyone to trek. That doesn't mean they need to trek with us. We just want a country to trek and develop a spirit of outdoor culture.
So you said not particularly that they should trek with India Hikes. So then how are you enabling everyone else to trek if it's not with India Hikes?
See, the biggest problem with trekking is there's a lack of information. Mm-hmm. People don't know where to trek, how to do it, how to go about it. Is there a trek in their own backyard? So this is where India Hikes comes in, where we bring out this trek information. And people, of course, know us as the largest trekking organization, like how you've introduced me.
Yeah.
But what they don't know is India Hikes is also India's largest trekking database of information.
Ah, okay. Okay.
And so there are more than thousands of treks which you can actually go to our website and pull it out and do it on your own.
On your own? I mean, can we really do a trek on our own? I mean, is that really possible?
It is. It is possible, and that's the level of information we put out where you get the confidence of doing it on your own, right from the GPX file to the detailed trek information to where to go, where to turn, what to do, who to contact, who will take you. So that you name it, you must be able to trek on your own, and that's the whole purpose of the organization.
So I want to ask you, how did India Hikes start?
It's the same thing as I started a while ago. See, when I used to trek in my 20s, mid-20s, trekking was not easy in our country. There were just a handful of trekkers. And it was very difficult to trek because we would always get stuck. You know, we were a group of maybe 9, 10 of friends trekking together, and we would always get stuck in knowing which is the next trek to do. Kahan kare? And trekking information was the crux of the problem because, you know, we would sometimes get scraps of information from some dada or some newspaper article or some, you know, something. It was like that. So there were very handful of trekkers in our country. And trekking was not a widespread sport as you see it now. And I realized that, you know, this is a problem which needs to be solved. So how do you do it? So I would always encourage my friends, why don't you put your trek information? We'll all collectively put it together. Uh-huh. Let everybody can, you know, they can use that information and they can do their treks on their own. But I realized that it is not an easy task to put this information together the way I could do it. So way back in 2007, 2008, I think, I did a trek to Roopkund, and I did it very consciously trying to document this trek.
Okay, you went in with that thought mindset.
Yes, I went to do the trek, but I also had this thought that I need to document this trail so that anybody must be able to do this trek. So I came back and wrote a guide on it, on how to do the Roopkund trek on your own. And that guide, when it was published, became a huge sensation in our country.
And it went viral back then, huh?
See, the viral words are, these are words which are common nowadays.
Yeah.
But it became a huge sensation in the trekking fraternity because suddenly people of our country realized that they could mount and high altitude expeditions on their own to as beautiful a place like Roopkund, which they had never seen or even believed that such a place existed in our country. And had the confidence to do it because the guide gave all the details. The guide didn't go into 200 words or 300 words. It went to 5 to 7,000 words. So it was an extremely detailed guide. On every turn and everything was mapped out.
I've had a look at that guide, and there's this line that I remember that there's a last point where you get water, and then there's 4 hours of gap where you do not get any water source. And I was like, wow, I mean, was he so conscious about the fact that, you know, you won't get water for another 4 hours, so you got to refill your bottles right there. That's the last point that you can really get water. And I was like, wow, okay, that's really detailed for someone who wants to go to a trek, right? So I wanted to ask this because, you know, you've obviously given it out as a detail as to how to do the Rupkun trek. And obviously, it will take some time for everyone to prepare and just go about themselves as well. But with you going the first time, there is this, you know, how should I put it? Is it a skill or is it a quality that you have that you like exploring things, that you like figuring out things, that you like this adventure? Or what is it about a trek that really excites you is what I want to ask you.
See, trek, because I've been doing it since childhood, since I've been 8. So it is a very big adventure for me. It's a discovery of a new place. It is also a place where I go and find a very big connect with myself and with nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it is all of these put together. There's a huge, very big mind, body and spirit connection that happens when you go on a trek.
Okay. We'll speak more about this fact, yeah.
Yeah. So, and every time I go on a trek, I get this connect. And I this is what attracts me and draws me. It is a great adventure. It is a great time to bond with my friends who, you know, we can, you know, spend a lot of time disconnected from any kind of disturbances and have very, you know, very be vulnerable and we have profound conversations. So this entire mind, body and spirit connection that happens is a very, very big reason for me to do a trek.
Right. You said you started doing treks at the age of 8. How was that possible when there was no information about it? And 8 is a very, I'm assuming it was with your parents or your father.
That's true. My father was working for the State Bank of India. And okay. He was a very senior officer with the State Bank of India. And one of his duties was to go on inspection of branches.
Okay.
And he would always choose branches which no one would want to go. So he would choose branches in Ladakh, in Kashmir, nice. In Himachal Pradesh, in Lahul and Spiti, and these kind of places where he would choose all of these branches.
Okay.
And then he would ask us, why don't you come along? And we would go with
him. Oh, wow, okay. That's
when
cool.
My father is inspecting branches, what do a young boy of 8, 9, 10 years do, you know? So we want to see, iske aage kya hai, uske piche kya hai, we want to see. And that's how my love for trekking started. Trekking, you know, seeing this beautiful landscapes.
So then India is in a way dedicated to your father. Would it be right
absolutely,
to say that?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Wonderful, wonderful. I also heard that one of your favorite comic books, and you're someone who read a lot of comic books in your childhood, I'm assuming, is Tintin in Tibet. And that had a deep impact, a very special significance for you to set up India Hikes. Can you tell us more about this? How did that happen?
See, when I was 8, 9 years old, two things happened at the same time. One was my father was going on this inspection jobs and he took us to this Himalayas. And at the same time, Tintin in Tibet came into my life. And here was this story which talked about a story of going to the mountains in the Himalayas especially. It was a story of courage, it was a story of adventure, it was a story of loyalty, friendship, kind of a little bit of spirituality was there. All of these things put together was the story. There was no villain in the story. It was just a story which was set in this setting and it captured my imagination because I thought if anyone had to lead their life, they must do it this way.
Ah, okay.
And then at the same time, I was going to the mountains with my father and my parents and I discovered it was the same setting as it was in Tintin in Tibet. So these two together had a profound impact on me. And I thought in future, kabhi bhi, when I grow older, I need to lead a life like Tintin did, of courage, loyalty, adventure, valor, all of these things. And in a setting like this.
That's wonderful. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you created a fantasy world back in the childhood and it actually, you know, materialized, like we say, in your adulthood. But generally, does books have a huge impact on you in general? Do you feel that?
Oh, yes. I'm a very avid reader.
Uh-huh.
So,
okay.
Again, at a very young age, I would read all these adventures of Chris Bonington and all of this. You know, he was a very big favorite of mine. Now people don't know him much.
Yeah.
He's still a living legend in mountaineering, but I would read all his adventures and imagine myself as being one of his team members going on his Everest expedition, his Annapurna expeditions, and on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And I was very much inspired by such books, and I still am. So books are a very, very integral part of my life.
But do you find the same kind of impact of books on childhood and kids these days? At least I have not seen kids read a lot these days.
I do. They, of course, nowadays with the gadgets, it's a little less when
it's
people
difficult.
Read. But those who read get impacted. I've seen that. Because we get a lot of children coming on our treks. And when we talk to them, those who read, they talk just like how we used to talk. So I don't see anything different.
Okay. But how was your childhood? Tell us a little about your childhood. How was it? How did this passion or, this love for reading came about? How did it happen?
See, love for reading because my parents are very well read, very well educated. And so naturally, I would always find them reading. So that's the next thing. Any child would copy their parents, right? So reading was a very natural thing. In our home, 3-4 newspapers would come. My brother is reading, my father is reading, my mother is reading. That's something.
Everyone is reading. Main kya karu, main bhi padhi leta hun.
That was considered to be like how life is. And friend circle also, they would be reading. So we would exchange books. So in school, it was very much like, how many Hardy Boys have you read? How many Nancy Drew have you read? It was a competition. Kon kitna padha hai? Then as you grow older, you take on more complex books and things like that. So from then, when you go to your 20s or so, then you stop reading fiction and you read books which are more to do with your profession and things like
that. So what do you read these days? I mean, if I were to ask you, it's mostly business books. Now it's more about how do you set up a company better? How do you grow a company better, bigger? Is it that?
Those also, but you get a lot of small nuggets of very critical advice when you read business books. Maybe it's a line here or a paragraph there.
Yeah.
Which helps you to get a clearer understanding of, all right, maybe we must think in this direction. So reading people who have had vast experience, a lot more than I have, is a very shortcut way of learning how to work.
Right. But, like you said that, you've been reading a lot of nonfiction and business books today because obviously that's the profession you're in now. Trekking was something that, started it for you, that gave the foundation. That's the foundation of India Hikes. But day in, day out, you're actually setting up a company, you're growing a company, you're leading people, right? Did you ever think that while you would do trekking, you would do something of this sort? And also that, what is it about setting up a business that excites you? Because trekking is one thing. That's something that excites you. But I don't think the love for trekking can, make do for whatever you need to set up a company as well. That's entirely different, exceptionally different from trekking as a skill or as a love. How do you manage both things?
See, I'll tell you a little bit of my background. I have always been an entrepreneur. So India Hikes is not my first venture. So I have never worked in my life. And that's because at a very young age, my father had told me that doing a business or an entrepreneurship is one of the best way of your creative freedom to show what you can do. So right since my very young age, I had another business, which I did for 14 years before starting India Hikes. So, So that's my background. And that I started with my father once he retired from the bank. So it was a training institute and it was a training organization where we would train people on English and foreign languages. And then we had advertising and marketing training. So all of these were part of my early foundation, and it was a very successful business in Bangalore. We had about 20 branches in Bangalore. We had branches in Chennai, in Kolkata. So it was a very, very successful organization. And then I moved out, much to my father's, dismay that, I moved out to start India Hikes because I felt the need to do, because I knew, because if you have been an entrepreneur and you have been exposed to global entrepreneurial world, which we were from a very young age, we know that entrepreneurship can solve problems of this world. Nothing else can.
Right.
And so I knew that these problems of the trekking world can only be solved by an entrepreneurial venture. It cannot be solved by my own interest. It has to be done with a body of people. You need a team to do it.
Right.
And
right.
That's the genesis of India Hikes, that I knew that, you know, the problem is it's information, but then someone has to put that information together. I cannot do it myself. It has to be a team.
Right.
It puts it together. Or even the way treks are running in a country, I knew that, you know, this venture needed income. You needed to earn something to support this documentation process. So how do I do that? We do that by, you know, conducting treks. And I was not happy with the way treks were conducted in our country.
Okay. Okay.
So the whole, I wanted treks to be done the way I used to trek and the way I had visualized trekking had to be done.
Can you tell us one or two things that were not really the way that you wanted, just to be clear as to?
Everything was very difficult. See, trekking in Sikkim was very different from trekking in Uttarakhand.
Okay.
In Sikkim, I was buying rice at 40 rupees kilo. In Uttarakhand, I'm paying 20 rupees kilo. Why is it twice the difference? In some place, I get kerosene to work with. In some place, I don't. So these are all, you know, problems of trekking world, which is very inconsistent. And I didn't like, in some places, if you want to trek and you don't have access of trekking, by then I was trekking for almost 15 years and
yeah,
I knew how
right.
to trek. But somebody who was new to trekking, which was impossible. Kahan jaye? Kiske paas jaye? Somebody, you go to a person, he will quote you 30,000 rupees, 20,000 rupees, some whatever came to the mind, you know. So trekking was a problem which normal people like you and I just couldn't do it unless there was an organization which helped you to do it.
Right.
And I thought India Hikes could be that organization which could do it, and visualizing it in the way I was trekking, because I liked and my friends liked the way we were doing it. We wanted the treks to be conducted in the way we were doing it, with that certain, you know, the way, the vision we had about it. So putting these two together is India Hikes basically, and today 2023 is still the same.
Right. Very interesting. I mean, the fact that you've done two businesses, which is collectively almost 30 years, you don't look that old. Probably it's because you trek a lot, you're really fit that way. But tell me something, have you had some formal education of setting up a business? Have you had some training on that front, particularly in your life?
See, I have done formal studies in management, but that doesn't help.
Okay.
Most of it is you have learned on the go. Uh-huh. And because I started at the age of 21 doing this along
right.
with my father, so the work experience definitely helped. Reading definitely helped. Reading
right.
and learning from global and learning on the way. I don't think I'm any great entrepreneur at this stage. And there's a lot for me to learn and do. But that 14 years of my past experience definitely helped India Hikes.
Right, lovely. Any one nugget that you want to give the entrepreneurs on probably one principle that you've held very close to yourself while leading both the organizations that you have?
See, most entrepreneurs, no, they want to do everything themselves.
Okay. Is it?
It's a very silly thought. It's not possible and they must not try it. So from day one, I've always said it must be a team which does it. Someone has to do it. It's not me who has to do it. Even though I have a good knowledge of trekking, it's not me who has to do it.
Hmm.
A team has to do it. A team has to be formed. I cannot be the trek leader. You need to form the team. So team systems and processes and teams is what entrepreneurship is about. It's not me, myself, everywhere.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Let's go back to something, you know, that you mentioned just a while ago as well, and something that you mentioned in one of your TEDx talks as well, Saiji Ganj, if I'm naming it correctly. There was a story of Sushila that you mentioned, and there were some interesting nuggets that you left in that conversation, in that talk. Can you tell us about the story, and we'll take it from there.
It was long back. I was with this team, and we were going to the Chandrashila summit, and I had reached the summit a little early, and others were coming up, and I didn't think Sushila would ever come up. That was because she was unfit, unprepared, unwilling, not unwilling, but unfit and unprepared to do this. So when more or less everybody was accounted for, and I thought, okay, now it's time to head back, let them spend some time, enjoy
right.
themselves.
What's the height of Chandrashila, if I may ask?
It's about 12,000 feet.
12,000 feet, okay, that's
and
high.
It's
yeah.
a summit. It's a
yeah.
summit, and you can see the best of the Garhwal Himalayas from there, right in front of you. You name the mountain, you will get to see it. So everybody was busy with that. When I heard somebody saying that, you know, somebody's still coming up. I said, Konara, you know, it's already done. Who's coming up now? And I looked down, I find Sushila is coming up. I said, Sushila, didn't I tell you not to come up?
Okay.
And she came up. And then when I looked into her eyes, I could see that I shouldn't be having this conversation with her. Because Sushila was in a zone on her own. And then she came down. There's a small mandir on top of, you know, the Chandrashila summit. And she kind of knelt down.
Hmm.
And within a minute, she started weeping. And I knew that she was going through this moment in her life, which was very profound to her. And she was sobbing after some time. And you can make out, you know, people are sobbing.
Yeah.
Kept a distance. And there was another of our colleague or a friend, I don't remember exactly, who was there. And I told her, you also, don't go. Let her have a moment.
Right.
When Sushila had kind of, maybe after 5-7 minutes, composed herself a little bit, then I told a friend, go along. And then the friend hugged her, and there was another bout of this kind of sobbing. And I knew, I didn't tell anything much to Sushila then. So when we went down to camp in the evening, I asked Sushila, what happened? Sushila was working in a German company, you know. She was a senior manager, and she didn't know why she was a senior manager. She couldn't imagine anybody had promoted her to be a senior manager.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And because she lacked that communication skill, her language was not so strong. She was not, she didn't come from those first class engineering colleges or MBA colleges. And, you know, she was there and she felt very underconfident. She felt somebody, she didn't deserve this position, first of all, and she didn't know how even to go ahead. And then suddenly when she went to the Chandrashila summit, she realized that, you know, she's a lot more capable than what she thought.
Nice.
That there is a inner will in her, an inner strength in her, which she did not realize existed. And then going to the Chandrashila summit revealed that to her. That there is this inner resolve in her where she can overcome any difficulties. She has already in her life overcome a lot of difficulties, and this was a metaphor for her. That climbing the Chandrashila summit was a metaphor which revealed to her that she could overcome this, and this challenge was actually a wonderful opportunity for her to now take things forward. And it was kind of a morning and night difference from the Sushila who left the camp in the morning to the Sushila who came back.
Wow, that's a transformation.
It is a transformation, and I see this every day of my life.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask. Do you see this a lot with people who trek with India Hikes?
Every day I see it.
But why does it happen so often? I mean, what is it about trekking that makes it happen so often? Because I also feel that there's a lot that happened with me on the trek as well. But I couldn't pinpoint as to why it happened. You've seen 15 years of people, you take, I think, about 20,000 people every year, if my stats are right.
More, slightly more than that, yes.
Slightly more than that. So why does it happen? I mean, what part of it do you changes?
See, there is a science to it, and there is the non-science part of it.
Right.
The non-science part of it is what everybody understands. See, when you go out on a trek, you're going out and you are yourself with the elements, with nature. And you're overcoming the elements of the nature.
Mm-hmm.
There are ups, there are downs, there are ups, there are downs, there is smooth path, there are non-smooth paths, there are difficult sections, there are not so difficult sections, there is a river to cross, there is a stream to overcome. These are nothing but metaphors of life which people instinctively understand. Once they overcome this and they come back successful, it is almost like they have overcome a personal journey, a difficult journey which they have overcome, and now they feel confident and resilient to overcome the journeys of life. Very simple thing. It's a confidence which you get, a resilience which you get, an ability to deal with hardships that you get, which people automatically translate that into a metaphor for life. And then at the end of the trek, they feel that, you know what, now that I have been able to do this, I can do anything else in my life. All the problems in my life are not as big as it looks. And then when they go to these kind of places, they see these huge majestic mountains, this huge landscape, and they realize that they are nothing but a speck in this entire dot that we have, what we call Earth. it brings them to a conclusion that if I have been able to do this in front of these majestic mountains, वो मेरा घर का छोटा मोटा problem कुछ नहीं है, मेरा office का problem कुछ नहीं है.
Lovely.
My relationship का problem कुछ नहीं है, मैं उसको तोड़ सकता हूँ, I can tackle it. So this is the non-science part of it.
Right. What's the science part
there
of
is,
it?
The science part of it is it's the hormones in your body which is doing this for you. When you trek, a lot of wonderful hormones are released in your body. This is a body's natural reaction. Endorphins, serotonins, oxytocins. And, you know, like this, there are four or five hormones
dopamine.
Which are released. Yeah, dopamine. Which are released in big quantities, not small. And because they have been released in your bloodstream, they take time also to go away. So when you finish a trek, you are walking as if you have climbed 1 foot of the air. you feel that. You have a sense of euphoria. You have a sense of goodness, a calmness, a wonderful thing. And now you're trekking 4, 5 days, 7 days, you're spending alone in the mountains. There's no distraction. There isn't any mobile phones. You're only having good, healthy conversations with people. Your mind suddenly gets cleared of all the junk. And you're able to think clearer. And that's what happens with people. So this science and the non-science comes together to have this wonderful cleansing of the mind, body and spirit. And this is what trekking does to you.
Wow. Okay. There are a lot of good things about this particular section, I would say. You mentioned that, the problems in life, you understand that the problems in life are actually not that big. I want to pinpoint on that because I think there's a consistent chatter in the mind. And whatever problem we have, we sort of make it much bigger than it is actually because of the chatter in the mind. First, before we get onto that, do you also have the chatter in the mind? Is it that your mind also chatters?
Not so much.
How have you reached there?
See, we have been trekking for a very young age, right? Since I told you 8, 9, 10 years, 20s, 30s, 40s, even now. So what happens when you periodically keep trekking again and again and again? One thing is very straight. The trek will have ups, treks will have downs. It will have a difficult section, it will have an easy section. And we are, even before the trek starts, we know this is going to come. The sceneries will change, but this is how it is.
Yeah.
So in our life too, we are very stoic. So this stoicism is, nothing is as good or as bad as it looks. So we, even at India, we don't celebrate anything, There's nothing to celebrate. Good things, okay, achha, bad things also, achha, theek hai, we'll carry on.
Wow, okay.
This is how, we have kind of,
balanced.
Over the years, it's kind of nobody has told us. It's just over the years, we have been practicing this kind of a thinking. So it translates in our day-to-day life also. So it's the chatter or something, as you call it. Yes, we do think about work, we do think about things. And that is a very natural thing. That's a human mind, to be creative, to be innovative, to solve problems. But it is not something which I would think, is anything extraordinary or anything not extraordinary.
Right. You're making a very strong case for people to keep trekking regularly, because if you can silence the chatter, nothing better. But has there been anything else that you've done along with this? Because, have there been treks where you've not been able to complete them? Have there been treks like that?
In fact, in my earlier days, most of the treks were unsuccessful.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And we didn't think them as unsuccessful. Because I told you, information was scarce. We go for a trek and we find a stream that is flowing and, what is up to your chest. You can't do it. And so you come back. Or you find a snowy section. It is very steep and I don't want to risk it. So we come back. So we knew treks were going to be like this. Even before starting a trek, we knew we may get this unexpected thing and hum jahan jayenge wahan se wapas aa jayenge. So we never thought completion of the trek to be the ultimate goal of the trek. Hum trek ja rahe, trek karenge, jahan tak jayenge, wahan se wapas aa jayenge. This was the way we looked at a trek. So now when I look back, many of our treks were unsuccessful, but it was okay. So that didn't matter. We had a good time. We were with our friends. We had this preparation for a trek was a huge fun. Doing the trek jahan tak we can do and then come back. And that was also a lot of fun. We were with our friends, pitching tents, having our tent talks and then getting back. So, the completion of the trek, if it happened, it was wonderful. If it didn't happen, it was still okay.
But do you agree with that journey and ends and, the journey is more important than the summit, all of that, because I have my own thoughts on it, but I want to hear from you. Is it really that a journey is more important than the summit, or, you know, the end then?
It's hard to tell, okay? It's hard to tell. It depends on people's mindsets, actually. For a lot of people, going to the summit is very important, like I told you about Sushila. For her, the journey is not so important. For her, actually, overcoming this is very, very important. But somebody like me, who has been trekking for a very young age, for me, just if I get an opportunity to trek, jahan tak chahe, wahi, I like it. I enjoy it. So for person to person, it differs. I would say for many people, completion of a trek matters.
Matters, yeah. That's what I
and,
think.
And they need to.
Okay.
But there would be a handful, little older, maybe a little wiser, who don't need that.
A lot more clarity. People who have a lot more clarity.
Yeah. It comes with a little bit of age and doing it more often. But for if you're younger, between 20s and 30s, then I would say completion of a trek is important. Because it gives a metaphor for your life. It gives you that, you know, I can overcome this, so I can overcome anything. It being somewhat the transformation, when you complete a trek, when you don't complete a trek, the transformation is not as much.
Right. Is there still some anxiety about the fact that I still have to do this trek once in life at least? As in to reach the summit sometime? No?
No.
Interesting. Great. But I've heard a lot of trekkers also speak about, in fact, one-time trekkers or 100-time trekkers, doesn't matter, that there was a lot of spirituality that came into them. And this word spirituality is, I don't know, mocked a lot more than, you know, in the yesterday ages. It has probably lost its true meaning as well. I am not sure if I know the true meaning as well or not. But what's spirituality for you in the sense, in the realm of trekking?
See, I'll tell you, Shubham, we never thought of it. And I don't think about it also. In my life, I don't know what it means. I just know if you go on a trek, it is very good for you. I know there's a huge mind, body and spirit change that happens. I have not studied the text. Neither have I done any of this, you know, going to, say, Art of Living or Ravi Shankar or Sadhguru or any of these kind of a thing. But I do know if you trek, it's as good as going to an ashram for 7 days.
Oh, yeah? Lovely.
Probably you get the same kind of thing. See, I know why people go there. They go there to find their inner meaning. They go there to find what is the purpose in life. They go there to, you know, find a little bit of peace and, you know, to kind of overcome the difficulties in life. And I know when you go on a trek, you get the same result. So I always tell people, go on a trek. And you get that added bonus of, you know, being in a healthier environment.
You're right. I have actually felt the same as well on both my treks. Like I told you, I've done two with India Hikes. And both these times, I was extremely happy for those 6-7 days that I was there. Extremely calm, I think, because there's a lot of chaos, noise all around us, you know, especially with the cities in India. I think there's a lot of hustle bustle, and that's the way of life, at least. But on the treks, it's much more peaceful. You're disconnected in a way. You're connected to yourself probably more. But I thought, apart from everything else, I mean, even if there was connection with myself or not, I don't remember that piece. But what I remember is that I was peaceful. And that's all that mattered for me on the trek. So yes, it's definitely something that gives you a nice experience. 7 days of peace is good enough for me to spend that money, I think. Yeah. So I want to move to something called Green Trails that you've started as an initiative. And I think that's extremely important to speak about because our habits need to change. You know, there's a sense of ownership that needs to come with each trek that we do. So can you tell us about this initiative? Because I think this is like the India Hike Swachh Bharat Abhiyan, I feel. Can you tell us more about this?
See, I'll tell you, because India Hikes has been instrumental in bringing trekking into our country, and we have brought out all the greatest treks of our country, the systems of the country. So the responsibility of even how a trek has to be run also fell on us. So when we were trekking at the very early years of India, it's the first 1-2 years, see, we were generally by nature, we wouldn't leave anything behind.
Okay.
That's how we have learned how to trek from our childhood. That wahan jayenge, nothing has been, nobody must know we have trekked here. That was the principle my friends and I, we would trek. So that carried on even on our own trek. But as India Hikes came in and then, you know, others started seeing it and more people started taking to trekking in our country, other organizations cropped up. And we noticed that this basic thing which was there in us was not there elsewhere. And we thought that, you know, this is not the way to trek, because if trekking is growing the way it was growing, then very soon this whole ecosystem satyanash hone wala hai. So we took it on ourselves to set the practices that needed to be done, because the government didn't have any idea. Nobody had any idea on how this had to be done. So we took it on ourselves that, you know, what if trekking had to be done, then do it this way, and which is an environmentally good way of doing it. So our vision was that we must leave the mountains better than how it was found, and not the American way, which is called leave no trace.
Oh, nice, yeah.
So their way is leave no trace. It works in their country. In our country, we have to leave it better, because there is always something to find. And something to, so we took it on ourselves to leave mountains better, and over the years we have been refining it, practicing it. It's become part of our culture, our lives and everything. And thankfully, because we are doing it, most of the organization try to follow the India Hacks way, because they know if they don't, then there's a lot of pressure on their trekkers when they say, "Bhai, India Hacks aise kar rahe hain, aap kyun nahi kar
rahe?" Yeah, right.
And so wherever India Hacks is, you'll find largely the trails are neat and clean and well maintained and things like that. But wherever India Hacks is not trekking, I'm sad to say, but they need work. The government is, of course, putting in a lot of effort now. And the last 5-7 years, we do notice a lot of change. But I feel a lot of change needs to come.
Yeah, I think the change still needs to come in the behavior and in the way we treat our own country, be it a trek, be it whatever, even the places around us. I think that still needs to change, yes. The government has done their effort, I would say. But I think the behavior still needs to change. In fact, I remember on the trek, we have to wash our own utensils, you know, the utensils we eat food in. And India Hacks does not use those plastic plates and all of that. And to wash the utensil, it's very hard because it's chilled water. It's like, you know, it's almost like 0 degree water temperature. And I remember we used to have groups, like 3-4 ka group banaya. Aaj tu sare bartan dhoega, kal main dhoonga, parso ye dhoega. That is how we did it, because you can't wash it every time. Right, but then I remember very, very evidently that there was a group of people who had trekked with other organizations, the other trekking organizations, and they said that, you know, they don't give us, they don't make us wash it. They give us those plastic plates. And back then I was like, "Wohi theek hai." But now when I look back, I know that, you know, it was not so great an idea. I mean, it's obviously a much more sustainable idea to use that and, you know, wash it. So yeah, I mean, I think kudos to India Hacks for doing that.
Yeah, we had to fight a lot of these, you know, conveniences,
yeah, exactly,
people want,
yeah,
and then
pointed,
stand
yes
up firm on that and tell that, you know, this is not the way to trek.
Yeah.
As I said, you know, we are still setting the trekking how we feel socially and morally it needs to be done in a country. You can always do the convenient way, but that's not probably the morally the right way of doing it.
Right. Perfect. So, I think great discussion, Arjun. Lovely discussion. I want to ask one last question before we bring this to an end. One trek that you would recommend anyone and everyone to do? Is there a trek like that? It's a bad question.
Such a very bad question.
Okay, so then we'll not answer that then. Any advice on trekking?
Every time I do a trek, whatever trek, I think this is the best trek in this world.
Interesting. Ye best tha. Nahi, ye wala best tha. Nahi, ye wala best tha. Every time, yeah? Lovely. Great. Thanks a lot, Arjun. I think it was lovely discussing with you. And thank you so much once again for giving your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Shubham. Thank you so much.
Great. And I hope that you continue making trekking easy and convenient. Not convenient, easy and better for people in India and probably across the world as well. So all the best for that, and cheers.
Thank you so much, Shubham.
Great. And for all the listeners, if you want to find Arjun on social media, you can reach out to him on LinkedIn. India Hacks is all out there. I definitely suggest, not because Arjun is sitting here, but because I generally feel that you should, if you want to trek, you should trek with India Hacks. That's been my experience. So yeah, thanks a lot. We'll keep bringing more episodes like these. Cheers. Bye-bye.